Now, in a Grainy Home video, a woman plays a piano in a classroom. Parents sit in a circle of chairs as a teacher motions to a playhouse. A group of small girls runs out, dressed in pink tutus and carrying wands. Watching the video, a man dressed in a bathrobe laughs, his eyes cheery behind his glasses. Titles appear: Amy Madigan and Richard Thomas. In the Name of the People. The video zooms in on one little girl with long blonde hair. She waves joyfully at the camera. As the man watches the tape, a tear drips down his cheek. Beside him, a charcoal gray cat cleans itself. In the video, the little girl twirls beside the others. More titles: Rob and Ann Phipps, Kimberly Warnett, Mary Black, Gillian Barber, Robert Wisden, and Scott Bakula. The man smiles through his tears, then begins to sob, raising a hand to cover his mouth. Taking a deep breath, he looks back at the TV. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH, described by Nicole Savickas, read by Margot Stage. For more about description, call DVS at 1-800-333-1203. In a dark bedroom, a woman with short blonde hair sits up in bed. She leans forward, listening. Titles continue. Music by Mark Snow, edited by Ron E. Yoshida. Production design, Ian Thomas. Director of Photography, Nikos Evdemon, CSC. Produced by Lisa Richardson. In the other room, the man, Jack, rewinds the tape, then lets it play. Teleplay by Tim Boland and Richard Leder, based on the play by Tim Boland, directed by Peter Levin. Jack freezes the tape on the little girl. He sits, staring at her face, his eyes red and wet with tears. On the television screen, the image of the girl is hazy and mottled. Fade to black. Morning. The blonde woman, Connie, fixes her hair in a mirror, then walks out of the bathroom and down a hall. Pausing, she gazes through a doorway to a bedroom. A teddy bear sits on the neatly made bed. Connie walks downstairs. In the kitchen, Jack reads a paper. The headline reads, "Execution Countdown." A photo shows a man in an orange inmate's uniform.
Morning.
Morning.
Connie picks up a tall mug, then turns and pours herself a cup of coffee. Seated at an island in the center of the kitchen, Jack looks down at the paper.
You were up again last night?
Yeah.
Connie places the mug down on the island, then tilts her head to read the headline.
It'll all be over in 2 weeks.
What if he gets another stay?
He won't.
Jack laughs wryly to himself. He stares at the prisoner's photo.
We didn't decide this, Jack. The jury did.
But they're killing him in our name.
They're killing him in the name of the state. It's justice.
Jack looks up abruptly.
You wanted this just as much as I did.
Sure I did, of course. I'd have killed him myself if they'd let me. But it was 6 years ago.
I know how long ago it was.
It felt like justice then.
Don't tell me how long ago it was.
Now it feels like revenge.
Across the room at a desk, Connie gathers some papers. She takes a deep breath.
You know, McMillan says it's very normal to have doubts at the end.
I've had doubts for a while.
I need him to die. I want this to be over with.
But what if it's not over? What if they execute him and it's still not over?
We have to be together on this for the clemency hearing.
I'm not going to the hearing.
Connie stops. She turns to face Jack.
What?
I'm not going to the hearing.
Since when, Jack, since when aren't you going to the hearing?
I can't be a part of it anymore.
You are a part of this. You're her father.
Jack turns his back to her. Setting her jaw, Connie takes her briefcase from the desk, then walks quickly to the island and picks up her coffee. She strides to the door.
And you are going to that hearing.
She walks out of the kitchen. Jack looks down, shaking his head. Now, Connie arrives at an office.
Hey, Ann.
Hey. What time is the Denver morning she'll get here?
7:30.
How about McMillan?
5 minutes ago.
A man dressed in a dark suit.
There's a small group protesting the execution at the prison. They're counting down the days.
So are we. Our people are there, right?
On the other side of Evans Avenue.
Okay, Tom, I'll be right there.
Now, on a television screen.
Hi. We're back live with Connie Murphy, the president of Parents for Justice, and Denver District Attorney Paul McMillan. Mr. McMillan, the execution of John Burke is 2 weeks away. Is there anything that can stop this now?
We're prepared for any contingency, Stephanie. The execution of John Burke was decided in a court of law by a jury of his peers, and it's exactly the justice that the people of Colorado demand. But you know, Stephanie, it's even more than that. Connie and her family have suffered for 6 years, and this execution will bring them closure that they're looking for. They will see that justice is done and that their daughter wasn't forgotten.
Connie, when did you first become involved with Parents for Justice?
6 years ago, after John Burke murdered our daughter, Jenny. I was filled with such rage, and I didn't know what to do with it. So I came here, and I made telephone calls, mailing letters. It helped. It helped me being around other parents who are in a similar situation. And I've been president of the Denver chapter for the past 2 years.
And do you still have that rage?
6 years ago, on March 21st, my daughter was murdered. She was 16. When my husband and I went to identify the body, I couldn't recognize her face. The gunshot wounds had blown most of her away. My rage makes me strong. It keeps me going. This changed me. This changed my life forever.
Now, in a flashback, the teenage Jenny pets a white cat. Connie, her hair long and red, fixes breakfast.
You, was this? You're not using my car.
It's a big empty lot.
There's nothing out there to hit.
Great, let me use your car.
Mom, I like your car, Mom, but it's going to be mine one day anyways.
Yeah, you're right. What are you going to make us for dinner tonight?
Chinese pepper steak, chicken enchiladas, or veggie lasagna.
Pepper steak.
Lasagna.
Enchiladas. Definitely.
Jenny looks over at Jack.
So this?
A brochure.
Well, it looks like they just drop you out in the middle of the wilderness with nothing but a book of matches and a fish hook.
No, that's at the end of the course. First, they build your self-reliance and improve your personal confidence.
Oh, I don't know. This looks dangerous. You're going to do rock climbing and rappel off the side of a cliff.
Mom, I can do it. I want to go. I really want to do this.
I don't know.
Well, think about it.
It'll change my life forever.
Now, Jack stands outside a building. A dark-haired woman walks out, and he approaches her.
Nettie Canton, I'm Jack Murphy.
Mr. Murphy, I'm surprised to see you.
I know. This is unusual. I want to talk to your client.
You're right, it is unusual. I'm sorry, but I think it would make an already intolerable situation much worse.
Worse? For who, Burke?
For all of us. This is not my favorite case either, Mr. Murphy.
Because you're going to lose?
Because John Burke is going to be executed. Because his daughter is going to suffer. And anytime a child suffers, it's not my favorite case. I have two daughters myself. I'm a mother.
I'm a father. It's my child who was murdered. Could you just ask him, please?
I'll see what I can do.
Jack watches as Nancy walks away, her brow furrowed. Now, two camps of protesters stand outside a tall gate trimmed with razor wire. A sign propped on the roof of a van reads, "Save John Burke, 12 days to live." As a car approaches, the protesters crowd around it, holding up signs. One sign reads, "Burke must die now," and another, "6 years on death row is enough." Now, inside the prison, a guard in a booth picks up a headset as Nancy is escorted into a visitation area. Opening a leather folder, she sits at a reinforced glass divider. On the other side, a guard leads John Burke to his seat.
2 more phone calls. That's all they're giving me.
Well, that's not right. I'll check into it.
She writes herself a note.
I'm going to the 10th Judicial District.
They'll turn me down.
Bishop Cole is coming to the clemency hearing.
Waste of time.
What's independent board?
They work for the governor.
The governor won't be there.
He doesn't have to be. He ran on the death penalty. What the hell do you think his board is going to say? Give him a stay? Commute his sentence? It's not going to happen. Not for me.
He looks away.
Your mother is bringing Lisa to the hearing.
No, she's not.
I think she is.
No, she's not!
In the booth, the guard looks up.
I don't want her there. And you tell my mother that I said no. Do you hear me? I said no.
She's trying to save you, John.
I don't want my daughter begging for my life. She's been through enough already.
Lisa, are you ready?
I'm reading Daddy's letter.
I'm going to be late for the doctor.
I'm not done.
Lisa, come on.
The 12-year-old girl purses her lips.
Why do I have to go?
Leading you home by yourself. Not with those reporters out there.
I hate them.
Lisa stands, then answers the phone.
Hello?
Hi, baby, it's me.
Daddy, hi. I was just reading your letter. Are you okay?
I miss you so much.
I miss you too, baby. How you doing?
I'm okay, I guess.
That's good.
Let me talk to your grandma.
But I want to tell you something.
Just for a minute, okay?
Please, Daddy.
What now?
Pouting, the girl hands the phone to her grandmother, who smiles gently.
Hello, John.
Hello.
I don't want you taking Lisa to that hearing.
She doesn't go. She'll always wonder what she could have done.
You're not taking her, you hear me?
You can't yell at me, John. I'm fighting for your life.
When the board doesn't stop this...
Don't tie my hands. Let me help you.
She can blame herself.
Give me the phone.
Let me talk to Lisa.
I don't want you to upset her. She's upset enough as it is.
I'm late for the doctor. When can you call again?
Tomorrow. I can call you tomorrow.
In prison, Burke grips the phone tightly, then hangs it back on the receiver on the wall outside his cell. Now, Lisa and her grandmother walk outside.
Mrs. Burke, we can have a word. You can
reporters yourself. Crowd the yard.
The execution.
Leave us alone.
Get
away from here.
Are you on your way to shame?
Lisa and Mrs. Burke struggle to push through the throng of reporters and cameramen.
Not answering any of his questions.
Lisa rushes to the passenger seat of the car and shuts the door behind her. Mrs. Burke climbs into the driver's seat and drives off, the reporters leaning over the car as it pulls away. Now, at the Murphys' home, Jack walks into the kitchen and turns on the lights. He puts down his briefcase, then stares at the gray cat, who sits on the island, cleaning itself. Jack leans against the counter, his arms crossed in front of his chest. Later, he works at a drafting table. Connie walks in and stands staring at him, a smile on her lips.
Hi.
Hey.
She steps into the room.
Did you have dinner?
Yeah, when I got home.
What did you have?
Something frozen. I saw you and McMillan on the news.
Yeah, how did I do?
Fine. Then they showed Burke's family. His mother and daughter, they were trying to leave their house. The reporters were all over them. They looked terrified. Especially the girl, Lisa.
Well, nobody said this was going to be easy, Jack.
I doubt that's going to be much consolation for them.
You know, if John Burke was so concerned about the welfare of his family, well, he should have thought about that before he shot Jenny in the face.
Come on, she's an 11-year-old kid. They're going to kill her dad in 2 weeks.
Connie sits, shaking her head.
I don't care about John Burke or his daughter's feelings. I care about what we're feeling. And doing the right thing for Jenny.
In a flashback, Jenny drives.
Slow down a little bit, okay? You're going a little fast.
I am not.
Maybe it's time to start, backing up and parking.
Sure, piece of cake.
That's what they all say.
Who?
That's what they say. They say it.
In an empty parking lot, Jenny steers their Volvo in tight circles. Jack clutches the dashboard.
So, Dad, what about proving ground?
Well, it's not a camping trip, you know, Jen. It's a survival course. It's what, like, the Marines do. We're not sure how we feel about you being out there. Did you forget the part about backing up and parking?
You always do this.
Do what?
You and Mom, you make it about how you feel, and it's not. It's happening to me. It's about how I feel.
Okay, park.
Jenny stops the car, then reverses at an angle into a parking spot, driving one tire up onto a curb.
There. See? Piece cake.
Jack closes his eyes. Now he walks through an office.
Jack, there's a call on line one. It's Nancy Kenton.
He strides past rows of desks and architectural models to a corner desk by a window. Sitting, Jack picks up the phone and presses the line button.
Miss Kenton, hello.
Mr. Murphy, I spoke to Mr. Burke. He said he'd meet with you. I spoke to the warden, too. Just go to the Colorado State Penitentiary today between 1 and 3. It's all arranged. Should I tell Mr. Burke that you're still coming?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Jack hangs up and gazes at a framed picture of himself and Jenny, which sits on his desk. Fade to black. Now at a cemetery. Under an overcast sky, Jack stares at a small headstone as Connie approaches, carrying an arrangement of yellow tulips. They gaze at each other, then turn to the headstone. Jack takes Connie's hand in his.
Can you picture her? I mean, being 22?
Oh, yeah. She'll be graduating college. Applying to grad school for architecture.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, she wanted to be just like you, and she could draw.
I thought she'd take a year off, travel around Europe with friends.
Maybe so.
I was just thinking about the time she first learned to walk.
10 months old, she just got up, she just did it.
No warning. Didn't hold on to the furniture, just go. Go, brave kid.
Funny and beautiful.
You remember all those stray cats?
Yes.
Do you think that she would have wanted John Burke to be executed?
Connie pulls away.
Why would you bring that up right now?
Because I'm here. It's her birthday. He's got a daughter. Because I don't know what I'm feeling.
I know what I'm feeling. I don't want to hear about your doubts. I don't want to hear about your second guesses. I don't care.
She puts the tulips down on the grave beneath the words Jennifer Marie Murphy.
Why did we let this happen to us? She would not have wanted it to be like this.
Now, in a flashback, Connie plants flowers, the sun shining on her long red hair. Jenny pulls into the driveway, then parks the car. Jack climbs out of the passenger's side.
How'd she do?
Oh, she did great. Just two accidents on the way home.
And only one of them was my fault.
Jenny takes a gray kitten from her jacket.
Oh, no way.
I found him at the
no
parking lot.
I tried to
no
stop
way,
him, but
I'm
I
not kidding you, Jen. Just listen. I brought home two other strays, right?
Yeah.
And they both love you very much, don't they?
Yes.
And you love them, don't you?
Yes.
So, basically, all I've done is brought home something else for you to love.
Oh,
this is kind of cute.
Okay.
Thank you, Mom. Besides, you're going to need all these cats to keep you company when I'm away camping this summer.
She jogs toward the house. Now, at the prison, the countdown sign reads, Save John Burke, 8 days to live. The protesters gather as a Ford SUV drives up to the gate. They crowd around the car. The protesters hold up signs that read, Save our children and Kill the Killer. A guard stands near the gate as it slides open and Jack drives through. Now inside, a guard leads Jack to the visitation room. Jack walks in, then stops in his tracks. His eyes widen and he stares at Burke, who sits at the glass divider. The inmate's fleshy face is hard set, with deep furrows between his eyes and around his mouth. He rests well-muscled forearms on the table before him. Jack takes a few tentative steps forward. Dressed in a navy blue jumpsuit with a white ID tag on the chest, Burke eyes him coldly.
What do you want?
Jack remains standing.
What the hell do you want? Last 6 years, every chance you got, you made damn sure they'd give me the needle. Now you got nothing to say?
You don't think we have the right to kill you?
You tell me.
You murdered my little girl. Son of a bitch.
He steps up to the glass.
You sick son of a bitch. I have lived with such hatred of you. I have killed you hundreds of times. My wife lives to see you die. And I have nothing to live for. I want to punish you. But the minute you're dead, it's your family that gets punished. The day you murdered my daughter, I stopped believing in God. I want to believe again. I want something to live for.
Trembling, Jack lifts his gaze to meet Burke's. The men stare at each other, unflinching. Later, Burke lays pictures of Lisa on his bed, piecing them together like a puzzle. One shows Lisa as an infant, another as a toddler. In the cell across from Burke's, an inmate stands near the bars. He lights a cigarette.
You wake, Garcia?
No point sleeping, man.
Gonna sleep forever pretty soon.
Yeah.
That girl I killed, her old man came to see me today.
You talked to him?
My lawyer told me to. Said it looked good in my hearing. That's crap, but what the hell do I care if I talk to him? 6 years, he still shook up like it was yesterday.
What do you expect, man? He is her father.
Burke looks up, then takes one of the pictures in his hand.
My old man was no good. Drunk, angry son of a bitch. He's the one I should have killed. I'm sitting here waiting to die. My kid's gonna be all alone.
I thought she was staying with your mother.
My mother's got a bad heart. She's not gonna live long.
Garcia looks down at the ground. Burke paces.
Don't want my kid ending up in no damn foster home.
He sits down and puts the picture back in place with the others.
Foster home just messed you up.
He stares off. Now at the Murphys, Connie gets ready for bed.
Connie, I'm not doing it to hurt you.
If you don't go to the hearing, it does hurt me, and it hurts Jenny. I need to end this.
It's not gonna end it. Why can't you see that?
Jack sits on the bed.
I went to the prison.
What?
Talk to Burke.
How could you do that?
I wanted to. I wanted to see him before it was too late.
Why?
Because I wanted to see who he really is.
You know who he is.
No, I don't know who he... Look, I don't know why I went. I had to go. I had to be in the room with him, and I had to talk to him. Connie, I want us to move on. We can't move on feeling this way. We can't do it.
I can. We used to feel the same about Burke. You've changed your mind. I haven't.
Okay, well, when it's over, are you going to walk away from Parents for Justice? From demonstrating in front of prisons and spending your whole life with the grieving parents of murdered children?
How dare you say that to me?
It's all we do, Connie. It's all we do. We relive Jenny's death over and over on television, in the newspaper.
I do that so no one will ever forget what we have lost.
We haven't changed her room in 6 years.
I don't want us to forget ever.
I can't compete with the memory of our daughter. Where are you going?
I am not sleeping here with you anymore.
Oh, come on, Connie. I don't want to lose you.
She stalks down the hall, leaving Jack staring after her. Now at the prison, protesters shake their fists. The countdown sign reads, "Save John Burke, 5 days to live." Inside, the warden and three officers walk to Burke's cell.
Burke, 5 days. Time to move.
Burke stares at his cell window, the panes of glass frosted over. A guard opens the cell door.
Got all your things ready?
Two of the guards walk into the cell. One shackles Burke's ankles together, while the other handcuffs him with a pair of cuffs linked to a belt. They help him to his feet, then strap the belt around his waist, pulling his hands down in front of his body. Garcia watches from his cell. Burke walks slowly out to the hall, his eyes down. He looks up at the warden, who opens his mouth as if to speak, then turns away. Garcia leans forward.
Right behind you, man.
Take your time.
Burke follows the warden as he walks down the hall. They stop at a barred door, and a guard on the other side unlocks it and pulls it open. Later.
You take your visitors in here from now on.
They walk past a visitation room, a guard on either side of Burke and another behind. Burke walks with halting steps, looking down at his shackles. Now, they stop at a metal door, and a guard on the other side unlocks it, holding it open as they pass through. Three new guards meet them on the other side, and they fall into position next to Burke as he follows the warden. They walk past the execution chamber, where a guard adjusts a padded table. Burke stares inside, then turns away as they continue past. Rounding a corner, they stop at another barred door. Dim fluorescent lights cast shadows on Burke's pockmarked cheeks as he waits. The warden unlocks the door, sliding it open, then takes a clipboard from an officer at a desk inside. One of the guards unlocks a cell, and Burke steps inside. Another guard carries a large plastic bin, placing it on the floor next to the cot. Burke sits, and the two guards unlock his cuffs and shackles. He stands, raising his arms to allow them to remove the belt. As the guards leave the cell, Burke sits back down on the cot. The guard pulls the door shut, locking it behind him. The warden gazes at Burke, who looks up to meet his eyes. Pursing his lips, the warden turns and walks away. Burke stares straight ahead. Fade to black. Now, Lisa hurries out of school. Kids turn to stare as she passes. Lisa's fair-skinned cheeks burn bright pink. A boy mimes being hanged. Lisa charges forward and knocks him over, sitting on top of him. From the sidewalk, Mrs. Burke watches as Lisa hits the boy. A teacher runs out of the school, rushing over to the children.
Stop it!
Knock it off! Knock it off!
He pulls Lisa off the boy.
Knock it off! Why don't you just go on home?
Choking back tears, Lisa picks up her backpack, then walks to meet her grandmother. Mrs. Burke limps to the gate, leaning heavily on a cane. Lisa runs into her grandmother's arms, her face distorted painfully. Mrs. Burke wraps one arm around the girl. As they walk, Lisa pulls a crumpled sheet of paper from her pocket and unfolds it.
Take to my locker.
A cartoon of a hanged man.
Anybody saw it?
They don't know how you're feeling, Lisa. Let's get home.
Mrs. Burke throws the crumpled paper into a trash can as they walk down the sidewalk. Now, Jack walks through a hall to a door that reads, Parents for Justice. He opens the door and steps inside, then stands, looking around. Connie's assistant, Anne, walks over to him.
Hi, Jack.
Hey, Anne.
Haven't seen you here in a long time.
No, I guess I've kind of stopped coming around. How are you?
I'm okay. You? 5 more days?
Yeah.
You're not going to stop at this time, Jack.
Is Connie busy?
She just got off the phone with McMillan.
As Jack walks to Connie's office, Anne watches, her arms crossed in front of her chest. Jack knocks on Connie's window and she motions him in. As he opens the door and steps inside, Anne turns away.
It's in the file.
How are you doing?
Well, there's an awful lot of work to do before the hearing. Calls to make, letters to write. I suppose you saw this. You know, these two boys were killed last night in a drive-by shooting. We've invited their parents to come by.
Connie looks up at Jack, then sits back in her chair, looking down at her hands.
What are you doing here, Jack?
I was hoping we could talk.
I've got a lot of work to do, and I've got to talk to McMillan.
We haven't slept in the same room for 3 days. I really think we ought to talk. I'll buy you lunch. There's a great place down the street, the Palace. I made reservations.
Connie closes her eyes, then turns to face him. Later, at a lunch counter, a fry cook places a plate in front of a customer. Connie and Jack order in a booth.
Western omelet and a cup of coffee.
I'll have the BLT with fries and a chocolate shake. I always order that when I come here.
You haven't been here in 20 years.
I always used to order it. Do you remember when we brought your parents here?
When?
I passed my exams, remember? We brought them here to celebrate for lunch.
Every time my father got heartburn for the rest of his life, he blamed it on this place.
You mean he blamed it on me?
Me too.
They look down as the waitress serves their drinks. Jack takes a sip of water, staring at the table. Connie folds her arms in front of her chest.
I just feel more comfortable sleeping in the guest room. And when this is over, we can talk about the relationship.
Connie, I want you to go see Burke. In 5 days, he'll be gone forever. You'll never, ever have this chance again. I want you to go talk to him before that happens. You've got to tell him your feelings. You've got to tell him what he's done to you.
I know what he's done to me. I don't care if he knows what I'm feeling.
There are so many unanswered questions.
You are.
These are things that only he can tell us. What were Jenny's last moments like? What were her last words? Don't you want to know that?
That's it. I'm leaving.
You do. Don't you always wanted to know
I it. Thought you had changed your mind. I thought you were going to come to the hearing with me.
You hide behind your anger so you don't have to feel anything. You're afraid of your feelings.
Connie storms out of the diner. She stops, remembering grocery shopping with Jenny. The teenager piles food into a cart.
You missed one. This is why I had one child.
Is that true?
What?
Is that why you only had me?
Oh, we wanted to have another child. Tried for a long time. Couldn't get pregnant again.
Well, did you go see a doctor?
Yeah, we did. Actually, we both got tested. Nothing wrong. I mean, you know, we'd already had a baby. They said, relax, it'll happen. Didn't.
Were you upset?
Disappointed. I wanted another baby. I wanted you to have a brother or sister. Daddy once said, children are the treasures of a family. And God put all our treasures into one child.
Jenny smiles at her mother.
That is definitely the dorkiest thing I've ever heard.
Well, don't tell your father that.
Why didn't you adopt?
Oh, no. I was afraid it wouldn't work out. I would have been heartbroken. Jen, everybody is afraid of something. I mean, aren't you afraid of just jumping off the side of a cliff with a rope?
Yeah. You have to face your fears, Mom. It's the only way you're going to get past them.
Now, Connie stands in the visitation room at the prison. She looks up as a guard leads Burke into the room through two sets of locked doors. Burke looks over at Connie. Connie watches him closely, her mouth open and her thin, haggard face clouded with sadness. Burke averts his gaze, then moves reluctantly to sit at a booth behind the glass divider, staring at the floor. His eyes dart nervously toward Connie.
I talked to your husband.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, I figured that's why you came.
Connie moves forward slowly, her eyes fixed on Burke.
I didn't want to talk to you.
Why?
Your husband was one thing, man to man. I could do that. Your mother. I knew you'd stand there and look at me like that.
How am I supposed to look at you?
I understand.
Don't say that. Do you hear me? Don't say that. Don't you ever say that you understand me.
Burke regards Connie out of the corner of his eye as she turns away and bows her head.
My daughter went to the movies and she never came home again. And since that moment, nothing. It's been the same in our lives. We get up with it every morning. And we go to sleep with it every night.
She slams her hands against the table. Nearby, two guards look up. Connie turns and walks to a window, holding her hands to her face.
I wanted to die. Oh, God, I wanted to die, too. But I couldn't. I had to live. I had to live a long, long life. And do you know why? Because I made a promise to myself that I was going to live to see you dead.
Connie glares at Burke, her teeth bared. He returns her gaze, staring coldly into her face. She turns away, wrapping her hands around her head, then lifting one hand to her mouth.
You're gonna get your wish, lady.
Burke looks down, then lifts his hands up on the table, standing. Connie turns to face him as he slides a black-and-white wallet-sized picture of Lisa under the divider.
That's my daughter, Lisa. Her mother died 4 years ago. My mother's had her since then, but she's got a bad heart. When she dies, Lisa's going to strangers. Your husband said that he wanted something to live for again. After I'm dead, you're gonna need something. I wanted to ask you.
Connie slides the picture toward herself.
Would you take Lisa? You and your husband, would you raise my daughter? Good people like you, you make a difference. I just want you to think about it.
With a sob, Connie pins the picture up against the glass so that it faces him. Burke's eyes well with tears.
You bastard.
No.
She crumples the picture in her hand.
I hate you.
Connie walks to the door.
No, give me my picture.
I hate you so much!
Hey, that's my picture!
Let me out.
Give me back my picture!
Give me back my daughter! Let me out! Let me out!
Outside, Connie stands in the hall, leaning against the wall. She breathes heavily, raising a hand to her head. Fade to black. Now, in the kitchen, Jack puts down a dish for the gray cat, crouching to scratch its neck as it eats. He stands as Connie walks in.
Hi. I heard you went to the prison.
Yeah, I did.
Did you see him?
Yeah.
You want to talk about it?
No.
Connie shakes her head, walking around the island.
Tell me.
Okay, so I saw him. I stood across from him, face to face, just like you suggested.
And?
He had the nerve to ask me if we would raise his daughter after he dies. That's a picture. He said his mom has this serious heart condition and he's worried about her going into foster care when his mom dies. He said, people like us, he actually said, good people like us can make a difference in her life.
What did you tell him?
I didn't...
No, but I mean, did you talk to him about it?
No, I... She could never be in this house. Every time I looked at her, I would see him. I would think of what he did to Jen.
Jack studies the picture. Connie turns to him, her eyes glistening with tears.
How about you? Could you ever consider it? Could you bring her into our home? Could you ever forgive him for what he did?
Jack remembers playing basketball in the driveway with Jenny.
Come on, Dad. I'm getting old.
I'm not getting old. I'm a fine wine. I'm getting better with age. What's the score? 5-4?
5-3. You've only got 3. You can't make up the score because you're losing.
I've only got 3?
Yes.
No.
And when you're losing, you've got to try harder. Concentrate on the fundamentals.
Yeah?
Find something extra to make yourself a better player. That's what they teach you at Proving Ground. I want to go, Dad. I think it'd be good for me.
I know.
Hey, Jen, if you're going to cook dinner and go to the movies.
Yeah, I'm coming.
Who won?
She did.
Oh, honey, you're a fine wine.
Oh. What if we tell you you can't go?
I would be a little bit upset, but I would forgive you.
You would?
Yeah, because a person who won't forgive someone is worse than somebody who needs to be forgiven.
Smart kid.
Now, at the prison, the countdown sign reads, Save John Burke, 2 days to live. Inside, Jack slides the picture of Lisa under the divider to Burke. Burke takes it, eyeing Jack suspiciously.
Why aren't you at the hearing?
My wife's taking care of that.
Jack sits across from Burke.
My wife told me what you said about your daughter. About wanting us to raise her after you're dead. That's why I'm here. Why would you do a thing like that? What were you thinking?
If I could just give her a chance. Do one thing right by her. You and your wife were good parents. And she needs that. You need Lisa. After all you've been through.
You don't know what we've been through.
Well, I got a good idea.
No, you don't, you son of a bitch.
Yes, I do! I'm never gonna see my kid again either.
I didn't kill your daughter.
The two men stare long and hard.
She didn't hurt anybody. She's just a kid.
Jack's eyes drift, but Burke's gaze remains fixed. Then he turns and walks away. Now Connie walks with McMillan.
Over there. We can't even wait for the hearing. Just walk right by them, right?
Lisa and Mrs. Burke approach Connie.
Mrs. Murphy. I'm Lynette Burke, and this is my granddaughter, Lisa.
Mrs. Burke, this is neither the time.
The day I die, I'll always ask myself what I did or didn't do that made my boy kill your daughter.
Please, Mrs. Burke.
I know he has to pay for his sins, but Lisa didn't have anything to do with this.
Enough.
If you take away her father, she'll never get over it. You know how that feels, Mrs. Murphy. I know you do.
McMillan leads Connie toward the courthouse. Mrs. Burke and Lisa stand on the steps, staring up at them as they walk away. Later, inside at the hearing, Lisa sits with her grandmother.
Ed, I need those preliminary reports on the Burke case, please. Thank you. Ms. Canton, would Lisa Burke still like to address the board?
Nancy looks over at Lisa. Connie watches as Lisa nods tearily.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Lisa stands, then steps forward, carrying a note in her hand.
I'd like to read you a letter my father wrote me. Just this one part.
She unfolds the letter, smoothing out the paper.
I didn't want it to turn out like this, Lisa. Me sitting here on death row, sitting at home, waiting for me to die. I wanted to take you camping. There's a place I know near Estes Park. There's good fishing. Lots of stars at night. It's quiet there. I think you would have liked it. I think we would have had a good time together. I don't want you to remember me this way, Lisa. What I want you to remember is that I was your father. And I was proud of that.
Mrs. Burke fights back tears as she watches Lisa. Connie's eyes water, her expression somber.
If you keep him in prison for the rest of his life, he can still my father. But if you kill him, just don't kill my father. Please, don't kill him.
Connie looks down, blinking. McMillan moves forward.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Canton.
Nancy stands and wraps her arms around Lisa.
It's okay.
We'll take a recess here and resume after lunch.
Connie watches, furrowing her brow as Mrs. Burke hugs Lisa tightly to her. Nancy stands beside them, patting Mrs. Burke's arm. Later in the hall, reporters rush over to Connie and McMillan.
We'll have to meet with the governor and present our findings.
Another time, fellas. Not now.
Connie stops as she sees Lisa and Mrs. Burke huddled together on a staircase.
Connie
pushes the reporters away and walks to the girl and her grandmother. Nancy watches incredulously as Connie crouches in front of them.
Clancy is ready. What's your next step?
No comment.
Pardon me.
No comment.
Is she all right?
Yes.
Connie looks down, then raises a hand to her forehead, closing her eyes.
Mrs. Burke, I'm very sorry that you're ill. But we just can't take her.
Mrs. Burke looks up at Connie with a puzzled frown.
You don't know, do you?
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
What?
Your son, he asked us if we would take Lisa and raise her. In the event that something happened.
Thanks, yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I just assumed that your son had talked to you, but I...
Yeah, okay, that's enough.
Okay, so sorry.
Nancy hangs up a cell phone.
John Burke has been granted a stay by the 10th Judicial District.
It's right on. How does that affect me now?
He's been granted a stay.
Mrs. Burke smiles down at Lisa, who stares, her face streaked with tears. Connie turns to face them, her eyes wide. Fade to black. Now, in a large wood-paneled office, McMillan walks to a phone.
Bring Mr. Murphy in, please.
Yes, sir.
Jack follows a secretary into the office. McMillan looks up.
Jack, how you doing?
Paul.
Would you call the governor's office and tell him I'd be 15 minutes late?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for seeing me.
No problem. Have a seat. So, what's on your mind?
I don't want you to contest the stay.
Excuse me?
Don't contest the stay.
I can't do that, Jack. An execution is a process. This one's been going on for 6 years. I can't just stop it.
Call the governor. Talk to the board.
The board voted to deny clemency. The governor will do exactly the same thing if he's petitioned.
He won't. If you tell him that you won't contest the stay.
I'm going over to his office right now. From there, I'm going over to the state Supreme Court, and I'm going to have that stay reversed. John Burke will be executed as scheduled.
You said that this was for Jenny. For us. That we would find some sort of closure. It's not true.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, Jack.
Closure's there if you can find it.
For you, maybe. But this has always been about you, hasn't it?
It's never been about me, Jack.
Then what is it about?
It's about two things. It's about justice, and it's about control. Justice for the people, control for the state. That's all execution has ever been about. Tell Connie I'll call her. I'll show you out.
Jack follows McMillan out of the office. Now, outside the prison, the countdown sign reads, Save John Burke. One day to live. Inside, Mrs. Burke steps into the visitation room, then sits across from her son. He keeps his head turned to the side, not looking up.
Did you talk to Nancy about the stay?
She doesn't know. This one may hold or may not.
He looks up.
How's Lisa?
Sad now, mostly. Connie Murphy told me you asked her to raise Lisa.
Yeah, I was going to tell you.
You can't do that, John. She's my granddaughter.
She's my daughter.
If you take her away from me, I'll have nothing. I need her. She needs me.
She needs a father.
You owe me more than this.
I don't owe you a damn thing.
You still blame me for him.
You didn't do a damn thing to stop him.
He hit me, too.
We have to think about Lisa right now. Stay or no stay, I'm not going to be there for her, and neither are you. We both have a death sentence. We have to do what's best for her.
Mrs. Burke lifts her eyes to meet her son's gaze. Now, Connie stands in her office, staring off thoughtfully. Anne knocks, then opens the door.
Connie, the Williamsons are waiting.
What am I supposed to tell them?
That through justice, they can gain closure and move on with their lives.
Shaking her head, Connie paces.
You should have seen her, Anne. She looked right at me. Right at me. Like she was... trying to apologize for what her father had done.
If Burke cared about her, he should have thought about it before he killed Jenny.
I know that I'm supposed to go in there and tell these people to be strong. Tell these people to use their rage for justice. But you know, when they finally execute the man who murdered their child, everybody else is gonna move on. And they're gonna be all alone. All alone with these feelings.
Anne stares at Connie, then looks down.
What do you want me to tell the Williamsons?
Tell them.
Connie bites her lower lip, then sits behind her desk and shakes her head.
I can't. My heart's not in it.
Pursing her lips, Anne sighs, then leaves the office, shutting the door behind her. Connie gazes at a picture of Jenny as a little girl, which sits on her desk. In a flashback, Jenny cooks.
I think you might have missed a pot. It's just a little one. Want to melt something in it, like butter?
No, I think you got everything cooked.
Oh, it smells great. To my beautiful, messy daughter, she can cook, she can drive.
But can she go rock climbing this summer?
We have not decided yet.
You think that you have to protect me?
I do. You're my daughter.
Oh, you can't keep my life from happening.
Jen, it's not that easy.
Why not?
Even though my heart is telling me we should let you try it, you can do it.
I can do it.
My head is saying you're 16 years old. Maybe you're not ready for it. Maybe it'll be better next year.
Mom, if you can't trust your heart, then what can you trust?
Now, Connie stands in the kitchen alone. Staring into the distance, she weaves her fingers together absent-mindedly. Jack steps toward her.
I heard you come in. What's going on?
At the hearing, I saw her. Lisa.
We could help her.
Our daughter's not replaceable. I'm not going to trade one child for another.
I don't want to replace Jenny. I want to move on with you. Maybe helping this girl could be part of that.
I can't do that.
Why?
I can't open my heart to this girl.
What are you afraid of?
Of betraying Jenny. As long as I fight, I'm with her. And if I stop, I'm afraid I'll lose her.
Jack answers the phone.
Hello? Yeah. Oh. Okay. Yeah, thanks. Bye. I was McMillan. The state Supreme Court reversed the stay. Execution's back on.
Her face somber, Connie looks away. Fade to black.
Now that I've tried Advil Liquid Gels, I know what liquid fast relief really is. Advil Liquid Gels rush liquid relief right to my headache. They have real liquid inside. No other brand has that. No one. Advil Liquid Gels. Liquid fast headache relief.
So I'm with Kathy and we're heading for lunch and she's like, where do you want to go? And I'm like, wherever, I'm just going to get a salad. Then it hits me, just a salad? Come on, there's your problem, Debbie. You're just settling once again. I mean, first it's just a salad, then it's just a haircut or just a career path. How about just a blind date who turns into just a husband who just sits around just watching football in just his boxers? But then I see McDonald's has this new salad, the premium Fiesta salad. Warm seasoned beef, cheddar jack cheese, crispy tortilla strips, and Newman's own all natural salsa. And it's just what the doctor ordered. A doctor?
Before you slip into that shirt, ask yourself, is it really clean? If it wasn't washed in Clorox bleach, you could be slipping into body soil. The creepy, crawly stuff detergent alone can't get out. Clorox bleach cleans away the body soil detergent leaves inside. Clorox bleach, the purest clean. And for your colors, use Clorox too.
Thank you for shopping at Office Depot.
Thank you for shopping at Office Depot.
Gracias por comprar en Office Depot.
Thanks for shopping at Office Depot.
Depot.
Buy your school supplies at Office Depot, and Office Depot will give 5% back to your school and up to 10% back to you.
I am so set for school.
We're making something new! Honey Bunch Oats with peaches!
And bananas!
So we're spreading the word.
Wow, real peaches.
Honey Oat Clusters Flakes.
And bananas.
New Honey Bunch Oats with peaches.
And bananas!
Wow. Denture Wearers love the precision control of Polygrip's ooze control tip.
It's less messy. It's that simple.
Polygrip's tip helps spread the right amount right where it's needed.
I think it's fantastic.
Want precision control? Try Polygrip's tip. Less ooze. It's big news.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, the simple pleasure.
Next.
Unbelievable.
Of Milky Way. Chocolate, caramel, and nougat melt into pleasure you can't measure.
Gigantic Cable Company, what do you want? Oh, you've got basic cable, now you want digital cable? No problem, sir. Your monthly cable bill will go up $25. $50 for the installation. $10 for the digital cable box. $2 for the remote. Service charges. More fees. Yep, these are hidden fees and more fees.
Why pay more to your cable company?
Switch to Dish Network Satellite TV and get America's top 60 all-digital channels, including your local channels, for under $1 a day.
And you know this price is only good for 3 months. You've got to read the fine print, sir.
At Dish Network, the home of the lowest all-digital price in America, every day, get satellite TV in the whole house with free standard professional installation in up to 4 rooms.
Let's get you on a contract. Oh, the price just went up. I know money doesn't grow on trees, but neither does my commission, sir.
Call now and get America's top 60 all-digital channels, including your local channels, for under $1 a day. Switch to Dish Network Satellite TV and stop feeding the pig.
The Lifetime Summer Double Feature.
What?
Every Monday through Friday night, a movie at 7, followed by a different movie at 9.
Exactly.
Because one Lifetime movie is never enough.
When you have the HP Pavilion Notebook powered by the Intel Pentium 4 processor, you can take it with you wherever you go. And now you can get your notebook along with expansion base for just $10.99 after rebates. Connect, download, and print remotely with built-in wireless capability. Create mixed CDs and play DVDs when you customize your notebook with the DVD-CD-RW combo drive. View photos and documents on the 15.4-inch widescreen display or upgrade to the ZD7000 with larger 17-inch widescreen display and numeric keypad. Call now for a limited time. Get this notebook and expansion base all for just $10.99 after rebates. Plus, get a free 15.4-inch display upgrade. And let us help you customize your notebook. The HP Pavilion Notebook with the Intel Pentium 4 processor. You can take it with you.
At 9 tomorrow night on an all-new Strong Medicine. When three high school students share mysterious symptoms, the clinic faces its biggest emergency yet.
What's wrong with her?
Having a seizure.
Strong Medicine. At 9 tomorrow night, only on Lifetime.
Nighttime. A large group of protesters stands outside the prison, huddled around a fire. The countdown sign reads, Save John Burke, One Day to Live. Inside the prison, Burke sits on his cot, pictures of Lisa laid out before him. He writes feverishly on a pad, mouthing the words. Burke looks up quickly, then back down at his writing. The warden walks in and stands outside Burke's cell.
Burke?
When'd you find out?
The decision just came down.
My family know?
Your lawyer is going to tell them? The officers will ask you if you need anything, what you want to eat.
Burke stares blankly at the ground. The warden nods nervously, then turns away from the cell.
Warden?
He turns back to face Burke, who walks to the bars.
Any mail for me?
No, not today.
Phone calls?
No, nothing.
Thought I might be hearing from the Murphys.
The warden turns, furrowing his brow, and nods to a guard, who gets up from his desk to unlock the door. The warden turns back to look at Burke, then walks out. Hanging his head, Burke paces in his cell, his fingers clenched around his pad and pen. Burke's dark eyes are red and wet with tears. Now, Lisa and her grandmother eat dinner.
I'll get it.
We're not talking to any reporters, Lisa.
I know.
Mrs. Burke watches as Lisa walks to the door. Nancy steps into the kitchen.
Nancy.
Oh, don't get up, Lynette, please.
Can I get you some coffee?
No, thanks. I can't stay. The state Supreme Court reversed the stay.
Mrs. Burke stares.
I'm sorry.
Lisa looks up, her face ashen.
Can't we do anything?
I'll appeal directly to the governor, but...
Lisa's gaze drifts to the ground. Nancy rests a hand on her shoulder.
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow night. You should go to the prison.
Just say goodbye.
Yes.
Mrs. Burke makes her way through the kitchen.
That's fine. We'll get up first thing. We'll go see John. Put on our nice clothes to say goodbye.
She cringes, raising a hand and clutching her chest.
Lynette!
Grandma!
Call 911. Tell them we need an ambulance.
Now, in a flashback, Jack and Connie walk with Jenny.
Have you got enough money?
Yes, Daddy.
And Lori's father's picking you up, right?
Her brother. He's dropping her off, too. He's always late.
You know, you can call me if you want, and I'll come get you.
I'll be okay.
I know. It's just a case.
Jenny buys movie tickets.
Hey, let's go home.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So dinner was okay?
Really?
Oh, yeah, it was great. Best chicken enchilada I ever had.
Wasn't too spicy?
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Daddy.
Anyway, those cooking skills are going to come in handy, too.
What do you mean?
You know, when you're out in the middle of the woods with nothing but a box of matches and a fish hook.
I can go? Oh, thank you so much.
Michelle, ready?
Oh, you'll get over it.
Jenny hugs her parents. A car pulls up in front of them.
Hey, Lori.
Hi, Mr. and Mrs. Murphy.
Hi.
Hi, Lori.
I already got the ticket.
I just don't want you to think I'm trying to get rid of you for the summer.
I don't. Besides, you can't get rid of me. You're stuck with me forever.
Jenny smiles, then walks into the theater. Now, Connie lies on Jenny's bed, her hands folded on her chest. Jack walks up the stairs, then steps to the bedroom doorway and stops, staring at Connie. She looks over at him.
I'm not going into work today. I was going to, but... I just can't think.
Connie sits up and slides her legs off the bed. Jack watches as she looks down, then back up at him.
I miss her so much. Sometimes during the day when I'm thinking about her, I can't remember her face. So I have to stop and look at a picture so I can remember it.
Jack nods slightly, gazing at Connie. Her eyes fill with tears.
As long as I was fighting for her, I didn't have to face all this.
I know.
Jack moves to the bed and sits beside his wife, his head bowed. Tentatively, Connie reaches out to touch him, then lets her hand drop.
You know, I've never really accepted that she's gone. I Well, that's why even if they kill Brooke, it's not going to be over.
You haven't been holding on to Jenny. You've been holding on to her death. And we need to remember how she lived. Not just how she died.
But why was she hitchhiking? Why? Why didn't she stay with Laura's brother? Why wasn't she with Lori? Why didn't she call us?
Connie leans on Jack's chest and he hugs her close.
No.
Fade to black. Now, a headline reads, Supreme Court overturns stay. Burke prepares to die. Connie sits in the kitchen, petting the gray cat. She stands, letting the cat jump to the ground. Connie walks across the kitchen to answer the phone.
Hello. Oh, hi, Ann. No? What happened?
Now, Connie walks into Jack's study, where he works at the drafting table. He looks up as she approaches.
That was Ann on the phone. Lynette Brooke had a heart attack last night. They took her to the hospital. I guess Nancy Canton was over there, and she was telling him about the execution, and Lisa had to make the 911 call.
What do you want to do?
Connie licks her lips uncertainly.
I want to make our daughter proud of us. I want to go to the hospital.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I need to do this.
Now, at the hospital, Lisa stands with an open book, looking over at her grandmother. A nurse shows Connie and Jack into the room.
Hi.
Lisa, how are you?
Lisa glances shyly up at them.
Well, we heard what happened to your grandma, so we thought we'd come by and see if there was anything we could do.
They turn to face Mrs. Burke.
Mrs. Burke?
They walk to her bedside.
John was right. You are good people.
Jack looks over at Connie.
I can't take care of Lisa much longer.
Lisa looks down sadly.
Will you take her?
Connie looks over at Jack, who opens his mouth and nods slightly. Connie bows her head.
You have to forgive John first.
I can't do that.
I know it's a lot to ask. It's a lot to ask.
Jack and Connie both lower their gaze. Lisa looks up at them.
Can you take me to the prison? Yeah, we can do that.
Now, at the prison, state troopers patrol police barriers, corralling the protesters on either side of the road. As they drive past, Lisa's face crumples tearfully. Reporters lean forward, extending microphones, and photographers snap pictures. The countdown sign reads, Save John Burke, 0 days to live. Now, inside, the warden leads Lisa and the Murphys to the visitation room. A guard opens the door, and Connie and Lisa walk inside. Jack remains in the hall with the warden and a guard. Inside, Lisa looks around fearfully, then stares at the ground.
Would you like me to stay here with you?
No.
Okay.
Connie glances up at the guard, then moves to the door. The guard shows Lisa to the fenced-off inner room. As she enters, she looks up at Burke, who rushes over to the reinforced glass divider. Lisa walks to meet him, her eyes brimming with tears.
Daddy.
Hi, baby.
They move to a booth.
The Murphys brought me here.
Yeah.
Burke and Lisa sit across from each other, the glass divider between them.
Am I really gonna live with them?
If they say yes.
Is that what you want?
They can take care of you.
Won't be their real daughter.
Burke averts his eyes and presses his lips together.
They need you.
I'm your daughter.
Burke turns away, his chin trembling.
You're gonna need them.
Lisa shakes her head, biting her lip.
I wish you had.
Baby, come on now.
I don't want you to die.
Burke looks up at her.
Daddy, please. Don't leave me.
He closes his eyes tightly and hangs his head.
I need you to be strong, Lisa. So strong. For both of us. When you live, I live. I'm a part of you. And they can never take that away from us. So I want you to... Stop crying now. You hear me?
He bangs the table.
Don't cry. Hey, go tell the Murphys that I want to talk to them. Go.
Lisa leans forward, urgently pressing her hands against the wire mesh that lines the bottom of the glass divider. Burke inches close, standing out of his chair to push his hands against the barrier.
I love you, Daddy.
Lisa stands, pressing against the glass, her pale face contorted painfully. Burke hangs his head, clenching his eyes closed as silent sobs rack his body. Her face wet with tears, Lisa starts to walk away. She turns, pausing as the guard opens the inner door. She walks out of the inner room and Burke looks up. He rushes over to the wire partition, pressing against it.
Baby.
Pausing, Lisa turns to face her father. Burke stands behind the wire. His gaze falters.
Love you.
Lisa's eyes well with fresh tears. She starts to the door, looking back over her shoulder. She walks out of the room. Stumbling back from the gate, Burke shuts his eyes tight. Fade to black. Now, Lisa steps out of the visitation room into the hall. Wringing her hands, she stands in front of the Murphys.
My dad wants to speak to you. Both of you.
A guard ushers Jack and Connie into the visitation room. They stand near the door, facing the fenced area.
I wanted to... Thank you for bringing Lisa.
You're welcome.
My mother gonna live?
I don't think so.
I don't want Lisa there at the end. I was hoping that you would talk to her. You could stay with her.
Okay.
Burke nods, one hand gripping the wire. Jack and Connie turn to go.
Mrs. Murphy.
Burke stares at Connie, then walks to the glass divider. Frowning, Connie follows, Jack close behind.
It's okay.
Jack turns and knocks on the outer door. Connie enters the inner room. She approaches the glass divider and stands across from Burke.
I know why you came here today. What do you want to know?
Connie looks down.
Did you talk to her?
Hey, you need a lift?
In a flashback, Jenny looks over her shoulder.
Yeah.
Did you plan on killing her?
I didn't have anything planned.
When did you decide?
There was no decision.
Did she do anything to provoke you?
She wanted to get out.
What are you doing? This is my street! That's my street! Please stop! Please just stop! Somebody help me!
Seated across from him, Connie stares at Burke.
Why did you kill her? Why?
She was there.
Connie bows her head, and the tears begin to fall down her face.
Sometimes, the only thing you can do is kill someone. Watch him die. You know that feeling, don't you, Mrs. Murphy?
Connie looks up at him, her face hardening. Burke's gaze is fixed forward, his eyes glazed.
How long did she know she was going to die?
In the flashback, Burke pulls the car into a clearing.
I don't know.
Jenny runs from the car and he chases her through a forest. Burke catches up to Jenny and pushes her down with one hand. She falls to the ground, then rises to her knees and looks up at him. Burke paces
please,
around her.
Please don't hurt me. No! No!
He pulls out a gun.
Mommy!
In the prison, Burke clenches his jaw as he watches Connie. She runs her hands over her eyes and back over her hair.
I need you to be there at the end.
No, no more.
It's not through until we do this together.
I can't.
For your daughter. Mine. For you. Me.
Burke stares at Connie. Now, at night outside the prison, protesters hold candles and gather around a fire. Cordoned behind police barricades, the protesters huddle together. One woman cries, and a man standing behind her holds an arm around her shoulder. Inside, Burke sits on his cot. Dressed in a white t-shirt, he looks up at the ceiling, then closes his eyes as the guard opens the main door for the warden and a priest. Burke averts his gaze as the priest walks to the cell door and the guard pulls it open. He puts his slippered feet on the floor and one of the guards fits him with shackles.
I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills, O whence cometh my help? My help cometh even from the Lord.
Burke stands as the guards fit him with handcuffs, fastening the belt around his waist. The warden leads the group down the hall. One guard walks in front of Burke and the priest behind. Two guards follow at the rear of the group.
So that the signs will burn before thy day, rather than one that night. The Lord shall preserve.
The warden walks into the execution room and stands at the door. Burke stops, staring into the starkly lit room. He sets his jaw as he looks at the black vinyl padded table. Burke walks slowly into the room and the guards unlock his shackles, the belt, and the handcuffs. The guards push him down onto the table, then strap him in, pulling a belt up between his legs, one over his waist and two across his chest. They strap his hands down on armrests that extend out from the table.
I will not be afraid.
The warden supervises, nodding to one guard, who inserts an IV needle into a vein in Burke's left arm at the inside of the elbow. Another guard inserts an IV needle into Burke's right arm, then connects the needle to a tube. Burke lifts his head, struggling to watch. The warden nods, and the guards leave the room. The warden walks around the table to three phones on the wall, one red and two black. The warden examines the phones, then turns back to look at Burke. The two guards who handled Burke's needles position themselves in a booth, separated from the room by reinforced glass windows. One guard turns a dial on a tube. The warden nods and a curtain is drawn, exposing the viewing room. Connie stands at the back of the room, her eyes brimming with tears. She looks up at Burke. His head turned toward her, he stares out, his face red. McMillan and Nancy sit at the observation window. Nancy sighs, her face pale. McMillan stares through the glass, composed and unruffled. In the hospital, Mrs. Burke looks up at the clock, which reads 9:02. In the waiting room at the prison, Lisa looks up at the clock, then down at the floor. Jack glances from the clock to Lisa, then paces in front of her.
What grade are you in, Lisa?
Six.
You like school?
Sometimes. Did your daughter like school?
Sometimes.
Looking up at Jack, Lisa smiles through her tears, then turns back to look at the clock. She trembles and her eyes open wide, then clench shut as she hangs her head. Holding his breath, Jack moves toward her and sits next to her on the couch. He lifts his hand in a tentative motion, then places it on Lisa's back, stroking her long dark hair. Lisa looks up at him, and he gazes down at her. As the clock's second hand approaches 9:00, the guards prepare two large syringes, one filled with red liquid and the other with blue. Connie puts her hands over her eyes, then looks up at Burke. In the chamber, Burke's eyes gaze questioningly, his brow furrowed. He glances toward Nancy, whose own eyes fill with tears. As it turns 9:00, the warden nods toward the booth, and the guards inject the contents of the syringes into two long tubes. Burke moves his head, squinting to stare at one of the tubes that leads from the booth to his arm. The tube runs across the floor and up through a loop on a stainless steel stand. Burke watches as a clear liquid moves up through the tube, then fills it. He closes his eyes, clenching his muscles. Opening his eyes, Burke looks up at Connie. He whispers, "I'm sorry." In the viewing room, Connie whispers back, "I forgive you." Burke's face calms, then his eyes close and roll back in his head, moving under their lids. His eyes stop moving, and Burke's head falls limply to the side. Connie raises one hand to cover her eyes, then turns to face the wall. Outside the prison gates, the police move the barriers. The few protesters left disperse, walking to their cars. A pile of discarded protest signs sits on the pavement. Now, Nancy, Jack, Lisa, and Connie walk away from the prison. Nancy nods to Jack, who raises a hand, waving goodbye. Nancy walks to her car, then looks back at the Murphys. They walk with Lisa between them, glancing at each other. Lisa takes small steps, her face red from crying. Connie watches as the girl turns and looks back at the prison. Jack puts an arm around Lisa's shoulder and holds it there as they walk into the parking lot. Connie places her hand on his, and her fingers lift to stroke Lisa's hair. Fade to black.